Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm very good. I'm not cold at all, Coach Steve, if you had a visual of this.
No, cold at all, Coach Steve.
I have a beanie on and I have a puffer jacket, which is not unusual. And yeah, it's a little bit cold because I had something icy.
It's a little bit chilly. What did you have icy, Nick?
Well, I had some protein powder and I put some frozen berries into the NutriBullet with the protein powder and made sort of like a sorbet, which Ooh. Is quite often something that I'll have as either a snack or a breakfast type situation around training. The simplest thing. And it's delicious, yet makes me freezing because I insist on having it in the Melbourne weather. I mean, I always forget that it makes me absolutely freezing, but that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, right. I went and trained a few hours ago in mm-hmm. my garage and it was icy in there. Yeah. So like on my phone, I could see like the temperature. I think it was like 9 degrees, 8 degrees, something like that, which some folk who train in their garage right, maybe listening to this right now, probably going, Steve, 8 degrees. That's like summertime. I train when it's 2 degrees. And I was like, mm-hmm. to that, I tip my hat to you, power to you. But I was training in track pants, which is rare for me, and a hoodie for my entire session because it was a bit chilly. So that was an interesting one. So welcome to Melbourne wintertime. And I know that some folk over in Europe are not having a fun time right now either. So
in the UK, the bunnies have to have ice pads under them, the inside bunnies in the UK. They have special ice pads to lay on because bunnies don't like the heat. Just in case anyone out there has bunnies, let me know if you have bunnies because I love bunnies. Just, we can start a bunny thread in the Facebook. Bunny thread.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Well, look, Nick, we are in week two of the challenge. So week two of the challenge. Gosh, it's only, 10 weeks to go. Wow. Yep. So it does run away from us really quickly. So once we kind of transition, we get through that onboarding stage where challengers will, you know, access their training plan, access their nutrition plan, start learning some of the principles around training, nutrition, and maybe challenge some of their previous beliefs around exercise and fitness and, you know, how to transform their body. Many individuals kind of, you know, get stuck into it. And we notice that kind of trend change from at the start of the challenge. We get lots of posts on like our social medias, on the forum, you know, how do I do this? How do I do this? How do I do this? And then we see a very quick drop off in those posts as people kind of just, you know, get it right and move through the challenge, which can be, and I'll tell you now, a time when it feels like the challenge is in a bit of a lull, and that's when it actually gets a little bit challenging. The challenge gets challenging, Nick. So that times, let's say maybe week 5, 6, 7 in the middle of the challenge, where at the start of the challenge, it's kind of like the honeymoon period. Everything's new, exciting. Like, oh yeah, this is cool. This is awesome. And then, you know, at the end of the challenge, you're like, oh, I'm so close to the end. I'm gonna do this thing. In the middle, that's when we kind of lose the motivation. That's where we lose the most amount of like challenges. Individuals who kind of like, you know, like give up on the process, and maybe, you know, other priorities come in the way of their fitness goals. So think about that now. I know it's in week two. I know we're still in that honeymoon phase. I know everything's still fun and exciting and, you know, really high motivation. Yeah. But what are you gonna do when week 5 comes around and the motivation is low, maybe your body's a little bit sore, maybe you're a little bit of diet fatigued. Oh man, I've been, you know, doing this meal prep dieting for a while, and maybe you've lost, let's say, 1 kilo, 2 kilos. Your goal is to lose 10, and it's week 5, and you're like, Jesus Christ, I'm not going to be able to reach my goal. Like, what are you going to do in that time? Are you going to give up? Are you going to throw in the towel? Or are you going to, you know, keep the wheels going, keep the motions going? You're going, yeah, okay, I'm going to get through this dip, this hard time right now. And then, you know, soon that week 8, week 9, week 10 will come around. And it's, oh yeah, it's full of motivation and excitement. And you see more and more posts kind of coming up online. Like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And then we get to the end and it's all sunshine and rainbows. And then we get to rinse and repeat. So think about now, what are you going to do during those tough weeks in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, definitely. It's always good to have a contingency plan because it's going to creep up on you and you will start to say, no, thanks, I don't feel like it. And that's where you will test yourself.
That's right. And I do think, Nick, that the normal like dips in training are very normal. We all experience it. And this is my own experience over the past, you know, let's say 6 months. So over the past 6 months, I went and competed in a powerlifting event. And I think I did pretty well in that event. I came third, which was great. But leading up to that event, I was full of motivation, full of drive, being like, oh yeah, I want to do this. This is the date coming up. And then, you know, that competition comes and goes. And then after that competition, you kind of feel a little bit like lost, right? You're kind of like, oh, well, you know, the drive to train is a little bit lower. The motivation's a little bit lower. Maybe, you know, other kind of life things pop up where before you were like, ah, oh, now that they'll be fine. I'm focusing on this big thing, this competition coming up. And now they kind of take center stage and they become a priority. So then now, like, if anything, for me over the past, let's say 3 months, I'm in a little bit of this like lull in training. I'm kind of like lost a little bit of drive, a little bit of passion, you know, maybe not training as hard as I was. And you know, that could be a combination of different reasons. Does that mean I give up and throw in the towel? No, you know, like what it is like, okay, maybe I'm not training at 100%, but I'm still going to the gym. I'm still, you know, cruising along at that 80, 90% of my effort and getting the work done. And I think when we focus on those dip periods, which is inevitable, and we all experience them, where there's times, could be weeks, could be days, could be weeks, could be months, could be years, where you're kind of like, you know, I've got kind of nothing going on right now. It's all about like that daily practice, that daily practice of, you know, doing something to improve yourself. And that could be, you know, maybe waking up at a certain time, maybe getting a certain amount of steps in, maybe, you know, setting a certain food goal. Like, I'm going to eat one big salad a day. I'm going to drink this much water a day. Or I'm going to, eat this much protein a particular day. Or like, all right, I'm going to go in and try to lift my body weight this many reps in a particular week. Doesn't matter how many sets I do. Whatever that goal is, you know, it's a daily practice of self-improvement. And once you kind of come out of that dip, you will understand that all that foundation work that you've put in to improve yourself, that's when it pays dividends, right? So very, very like financial words here. You know, in that dip, you got to buy the dip, right? And then you put that investment in and then you reap the rewards in those high periods. So put in the work now. If you're feeling low in motivation, put in the work now. And that could be maybe for summertime that's coming up, you know, in a couple of months. Put in that work now, because when that time comes to reap the rewards, that's when we'll pay dividends. That's when you get to, you know, sow your crops, right? The right word, mm-hmm. Sow your crops. Yeah. That's my little rant. Do the work, even though you may feel like you don't want to do it.
Yeah, you get to reap what you sow.
That's right. Because sowing is to put in the ground, yeah. Right?
So you we're sowing it all. At the moment, we're sowing. We're gonna reap it after awards night.
Yes. Now, look, Nick, we've been busy with our app. So the M Challenge app, we're working on new improvements every single day. And over the past week, we have launched new updates to the M Challenge app, okay? So we have made some modifications to the way that the nutrition is prescribed, especially around supplementation, a few cosmetic changes. And at the time of the release of this podcast, we are expecting the brand new Google Fit integration to our Android users, which will then show the Steps leaderboard as well. So that's been an exciting adventure for us to integrate that feature, working very closely with Google, the big powerhouse themselves. All hail the Google overlords is what I say.
Google another feature, is more powerful than Apple.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had no idea. You probably know this. Did you know that?
Well, look, I think it's how you view that question, Nick, who's more powerful, right? One, you can determine from the size of the company, and then two, you know, maybe how much they influence each other. So maybe that's a whole other podcast in itself.
I'm very interested.
The other new feature that we have integrated is a update or change your start photo feature. So you can go into your profile, you click the little progress button, and you got to see your start photo there. And then you can actually like click that photo or this little button underneath, you know, like update, and you can change your photo. You can change your photo as many times as you like, as long as you have the entry document. So if you want to be eligible for the M Challenge competition, you need that entry document. I would say that you would want to take that photo earlier rather than later. So let's say you're listening to this and it's, you know, maybe week 8 for argument's sake, and you're like, oh, I want to update my start photo. You would then be taking your start photo, but you know, in week 8, and then you've got 4 weeks to week 12. So then you've got a 4 week before and after for the competition. Versus if you take your start photo maybe prep week, maybe you redo it in week 1, and then you've got that like 12, maybe 13 weeks of transformation. So you can be really competitive in the challenge. Okay, so we have introduced that feature that is through your profile. Okay.
Yeah.
Now there's another feature which I think some individuals may not be finding, which I think is really cool. I've been using it quite a bit, okay? And it's the exercise history feature, okay? Mm-hmm. So if you go through the training section, go browse, and then you can look at individual exercises. So you just need to click maybe like upper body or lower body exercises. So let's say you're looking for a bench press. It's an upper body exercise. Go upper body, go for the bench press. It'll come up with all the information of every time you've completed a bench press across any training program, okay? Then what you can do is you can see what weights you used and how many reps you've completed as well. And it's got this really nice chart and actually kind of counts how many reps you use. So we're really interested in kind of like volume progression. So if you are, let's say, doing a certain program, you're doing like bench press on like a Monday, because that's International Bench Press Day, right, Nick? And you're doing a bench press and the program prescribes you three sets of maybe like 5 to 10 repetitions. Week one, you do 10, 8, and 6. Week two, you do 10, 9, and 7. And then week three, you do 10, 9, and 9, right? On the exercise history overview page, you'll see a nice graph that kind of shows that increase in total reps in each particular week. So that can be a great way to view your progression, yeah, in this nice graph and charts to kind of show your increase in reps over time. So if you haven't already, go check out the exercise history section in the training tab. And I think some people are kind of missing some of those features, you know, very quick to jump onto like the nutrition or the training, but maybe spending a little bit less time looking at some of those other features and even less time maybe in the learn section. So I will invite you, dear listener, to spend some time in that learn section. You'll probably find lots of answers to common questions on the forum as you spend some time in that learn section, okay?
Yeah, that's right. And people that are requesting graphs and charts, there are some in there. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Now, Nick, let's move on to our first segment here in the Challenge Weekly Show. We've got our community spotlight where we're going to highlight some of our community members for this week. And the first thing I want to say, Nick, is that it's great to see individuals making lots of posts about their training and their nutrition across places like our social medias. And it's really amazing to see that transition from maybe that first prep week one, like, oh, how do I work this thing? Like, how do I change my thing? How do I do this? How do I do this? To now, it's like, oh yeah, look at my bench press, look at my deadlift, look at my food that I'm making, look at my bicep flex, you know, our Flex Friday, which we love. So if you haven't already, jump onto our Facebook social hub and join in the conversation, right? Those posts are one, important to those postees, those people who create those posts, make those posts because it's important for them. And we're not there to judge what posts they make or anything like that. So firstly, if you don't like what other people are posting, just scroll past, that's fine. That's important for them. And then two, it can be a very highly inspiring and motivating area to be in. You know, spend some time, like a few people's posts, comment on them, maybe make a post yourself where you see lots of warm love being spread to you as well. So, you know, join our Facebook social hub. Great place to be social and, you know, get around that idea of, you know, really focusing on our training and our nutrition, especially as we transition into this next kind of phase of the challenge.
Correct. Success leaves clues. And yeah, if you want success for yourself, you need to surround yourself with successful people. That's why that group is good.
So Nick, I believe you found a few individuals you'd like to highlight this week. So take us away. Who would you like to highlight?
Okay, if only you had your drum roll, that's what you should be doing, but you don't have it. So we might do that in the future. So we've got Chantel Adams. Hi, Chantel Adams. Now, I couldn't go past this one just because it's deadlifts, even though she starts off by saying, I hate deadlifts with a passion. So that makes me sad, but I'm sure that she'll get over that. They were on today's workout. I was going to switch them out, but I didn't. I did them. Did I hate them? Yes. Did I nearly pee myself? Yes. Now, I'm not sure about that bit, but look, that's all good. But did I give them my all? Yes. So she says, hashtag NSV, non-scale victory. I just like it because she's kind of getting over that idea of hating an exercise and giving it a go. And one of my coaches years ago said to me, you know, the exercises that you hate the most are often the ones that you need to actually be doing. So, that's goes out to Chantel. Well done for your deadlift. We love deadlifts, so we'd love to see some of your deadlifts in action, and good on you for doing it. Well done.
Yeah, I like that. And I agree with you. We often have that like love-hate relationship with certain exercises, and we know that they're the exercises that we really need to do, hey?
Yeah, which one is your worst?
I would say I'm kind of on the wagon of like a Bulgarian split squat. Like whenever I program that for myself, I'm like, why did you do that? You know, but then I know them like, oh, I need to do more single leg stuff. So I need to put it in, but it's like a love-hate relationship because I get such a juicy like quad pump from it, but then I hate it while I'm doing it. So it's definitely, What about you, Nick?
Oh, I was going to say that you stole my one, but then I suppose for me, like this is, everyone's going to kill me and say no way, but I guess for me, it's like flat bench press because it's not my favorite thing ever. But now that I'm a bit stronger, I quite like it. Anything overhead pressing is not my favorite, but I do it and I'm a lot better at it now, but yeah, there's so many, but yeah. I still do it all because, you know, that's all I have left in my life. That's the only thing that makes me happy. Oh. All right. Next one, we've got Anita Kelly, and she says, 5 a.m. sucks, truth. But if 5 a.m. works for you, get on with it. We've got 12 weeks to smash our goals and create healthier versions of ourselves. Woohoo! So how good is that positive energy from Anita Kelly? I think that she needs to just be there every day, all day, everywhere. Well done, Anita.
I love that. I love that a lot. And especially, you know, those folk that are waking up super early to go and train. I've done podcasts with previous challengers who are getting up at like 2 a.m. to try to get their training in. So I think we all live very busy lives and we all have very full lives. And sometimes, you know, it is a little bit of, you know, gotta make time. And that's a very, you know, sometimes unempathetic way to describe it. And I appreciate that. But sometimes, you know, we do need to kind of force it a little bit, you know, push some energy towards getting our training session in or getting our meal prep in. And if that means that you're getting up at 4 a.m., 5 a.m., that's kind of what we need to do, especially if we want to, you know, strive for something that might be against what our like environment is allowing us to be right now. So good on you, Anita. Keep it up and keep that 5 a.m. team going.
Yeah, well, the only reason I'm sitting here on this podcast with you as a coach of this challenge is because I committed like 10 or 12 or 15 years ago, I guess it is now, to getting up at that time and even earlier to make my life the way that I wanted it to be. If I'd have decided to stay in bed way back then, I wouldn't be sitting here with you right now, Coach Steve.
Ooh, look at that hindsight, Nick.
I'd be in an office somewhere just sitting there typing, wishing that I had glutes.
So there you go. If you want to have glutes and be on the Challenge podcast as Coach Nick, just wake up at 5 a.m., wait 10 to 12 years and yep, maybe you'll be there.
You'd have to fight me for it though. You'd have to fight me.
Oh gosh. Love okay. It.
So now we've got Rosemary Gustowski. And now I hope that, or it could be Gustowski actually, to be honest. Hi, Rosemary. We love you. Rosemary's kind of changed her approach a little bit for this challenge, so it'll be really interesting to see how she goes, because she's kind of really sorted out her priorities. So she says, workouts all done so far this week. I'm really focusing on my diet this challenge and not stressing about not getting a workout in, but doing the steps. So I love it just because she's shifted those priorities in terms of not stressing too much if she can't get everything done, but nailing that nutrition and nailing her incidental exercise and also deliberate stepping. So well done, Rosemary.
Well done, Rosemary. Mm-hmm. That's great. I love that. And I love that concept of, you know, maybe like simplifying our approach to training, where, okay, sometimes you may not be able to get your training in, but can you get your physical activity in? And that's very like, you know, big, broad public health kind of like concepts. But it's like, all right, like if I can't do anything, like, can I get my steps in? All right, yeah, I do have 20 minutes. I could go walk around the block, or maybe instead of sitting on the couch watching Netflix, you go, all right, well, I've got a bit of housework to do. I can walk around the house, walk, and get your steps in. Great, awesome. I do love that a lot. So hopefully that leads some positive changes to you, Rosemary.
Yeah, I reckon it will. So keep on track, Rosemary, every day, one day after another.
So good. Nick, I've got a few here that I'd like to highlight. So the first one goes out to Amanda Peters. Okay, hello, Amanda. And she writes, one day at a time, one rep at a time. What a killer first upper body training. But I'd like to know whose idea was it to finish with deficit push-ups? Ooh. Amanda, I will say that it was my idea. So enjoy deficit push-ups. I do like deficit push-ups, like the big stretch you get on your pecs. And then especially towards the end of the session, if you are training upper body, maybe the triceps a little bit of a limiting factor, I get the big tricep burn. And, you know, you can very nicely do advanced training methods. Like if you want to do like a mechanical drop set, like you do push-ups on your toes and then, you know, drop down to your knees, keep going, and then even drop the deficit, put your hands on the floor. So lots of ways you could do maybe mechanical drop set styles and myo reps and those types of things. So a little bit more of advanced type concepts. If you've chosen advanced, you might know what I'm talking about. If not, you can go check out some of the articles in the Learn section. You might learn a little bit more about that too.
Excellent. Nick. Well, you're very naughty with those deficit push-ups, but you mean well.
Yeah, look, sometimes I think that I'm a little bit of a mad scientist with my training programs, but I do think that they get the outcome that we're looking for.
Yeah, they're not bad. I'm going to rate them. I'll probably give them like a 10 out of 10.
Just a cheeky, simple 10 out of 10, nothing.
I know. Do you know, can I just tell everybody that Shane, doesn't matter what I cook or do, it's always 9, because there's no such thing as a 10 according to him.
I like that.
Even
like
a restaurant is like, it's never a 10.
I like that. Always
not
looking
sure
for
what
that.
He's waiting
bit
for.
More
but
improvement. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Nick, we're going to continue this little theme here. We've got Amanda Peters and now we've got Amanda Moore. So Amanda. And Amanda Moore writes, I've decided to do a reflection at the end of each week for my own accountability. Week 1, good things. Completed all workouts. No additional sugary drinks. Stuck pretty close to nutrition. A couple of days, not quite enough calories. Things that need improving. Water intake. Step count. Self-confidence, stop putting myself down. I like this. I like this a lot. And it's a really powerful thing to do is reflecting on what you're trying to do right now, looking at the things you did well, and then looking at the things that you can improve on. And I think Amanda Moore has done that. And I think that's a great way for her to do more is to reflect on her journey. One third thing I would ask you to reflect on is to think about future challenges or future roadblocks or future things that might come up right in that particular week. So let's say you choose to do on a Sunday, that's your reflection day. You write down the things you did well that week, your things that you may improve on, and then maybe some future challenges in that particular week. So maybe, you know, okay, on Wednesday, I've got to, you know, I'm working 9 to 5, and then I've got to pick up the kids, and I've got to take my girl to you know, dance lessons, and my boy to gymnastics because they, you know, whatever. And you know, this is a busy day on Wednesday. So I was like, well, I've got to find a way to train and get my steps in that particular day. I'm going to wake up at 4 a.m. to get my steps in so I could do all those things on that day. Yeah. Or maybe that weekend, this Friday, Saturday coming up, it's my kid's birthday. It's my anniversary with my partner. It's a work function that is going to be difficult. That's the time that you could plan for the future. You plan for the future rather than being, you know, caught last minute being like, oh, well, today's the day. I haven't prepared for this. And that's when things can happen. So those three things, if you add that to a practice of reflecting, you will improve any behavior change that you wish. Let that be weight loss, weight gain, muscle gain, fitness. If you want to try to read more, meditate more, drink more water, be less stressed, you name it. Those three things are the key to making any change in your life.
True.
Nick, last one here. We've got Christine.
Good luck. And go. What's her last name?
Christine Grigretsky. Did I nail it? Christine Grigretsky. Nick, you can give it a go. I think it's a bit Polish, maybe.
No, I think you're right. I don't have anything different there. I can't see how it could, unless it's Grigretsky.
Grigretsky.
You can let us know, Christine,
if you're listening to this. So Christine, Grigretsky. What a last name. I love that. And I think I needed to put Rosemary Gustowski to the test with that last name here. And that's maybe our second theme for this community highlights, the names with the longest last name.
Yeah. We're great coaches, but probably not so great at pronouncing people's last names. But
yes.
We've got a history of that.
Oh, yes. And you know, you know, Nick, here's my little thing, right? So I like to think of myself as in quotes, a well-read man. You know, I've got a master's degree. I spent lots of time reading textbooks and books and stuff like that. But I read a lot, but I don't tend to talk about things a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I first kind of got caught out way back in my youth when I was maybe like 6 or 7 in primary school. I played a lot of Pokemon. You remember the game Pokemon? Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, Pokemon, it didn't have any like sound. You just read it. Of course, they had like, you know, the 8-bit sound, you know, those types of noises, but it didn't like speak to you. So I'd read these words like, you know, Charmander and stuff like that. But I never knew how to pronounce like certain Pokemon's names until I'd watch maybe Pokemon on TV and be like, oh, it's Squirtle. Not like, you know, however else I thought you'd spell it. And then I faced those problems all through my academic time, especially like at uni. You know, I'd be reading in a textbook about, you know, certain anatomy words, you know, like these words that are like 10 letters long. And then I'll go and say it in like a class setting. And I look like the idiot because I'm like, oh, I didn't know it was pronounced like this. Like, you know, Colonchia, not Colochnia. I'm like, ah, oh, I was the idiot. Anyway, that's my little rant. So I'm sorry if I pronounce any names wrong. But going back to Christine, focusing on Christine here, and she writes, does anyone else think heel elevated squats are the devil? I have always struggled with squats and never been able to lift really heavy with them. Tall, long legs and squats don't seem to mesh well. I like this because, you know, Christine, she's had maybe some challenges with squats in the past and she's learnt how to modify the squat so that she can get down really low, get a big stretch in her quadricep, you know, get that hamstring onto the calf and complete that squat. And then, you know, get that nice big burn sensation that we need to. And then the second part that she's highlighted is that you may not always need to go, quote, heavy on a particular exercise. One, like what is heavy? Heavy is relative, but you don't always need to go at a load where it maybe risks your execution of that exercise or maybe risks the sensation into a certain muscle. Like, you know, let's say a squat, if I go really heavy, I don't feel it in my quads. I feel it in my glutes and my low back because that's what I'm trying to, like, you know, drive the powerhouse to try to lift up that load. Whereas if I go a little bit on the lighter spectrum and modify my execution, my quads are almost like they're going to blow up in maybe a similar rep range. So I think Christine's really highlighted this here where if you can't squat for whatever reason, try maybe that heel elevated squat position, especially if you think that you have long femurs. You can definitely get down nice and low and get that nice big quad burn.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you've got a swing squat machine at your gym, by any chance, use that because I've been using that. And ooh.
Yeah.
It hurts. Yeah. Do you know what? I can use 60 kilos on that now. And that's a lot for that, I reckon.
Yeah.
It's horrific, but that makes you go down all the way. I'm telling you.
That's right. It's very humbling.
Very humbling, but very needed.
It is. Nick, let's move on to our coach's corner where we offer our tip for the week. So, Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
Okay, firstly, I just want to take this platform to mention something that I've just invented. It's called Fit Sanity. So it means, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over but expecting a different result. So Fit Sanity is the same thing. And I just wanted to point that out. I'm actually talking about something different, which is food, but we can go into that as well. But fit sanity is where somebody says, I want to add back everything that I've ever done into my program that you've given me. You've given me 4 training days, but I want to do 7. And I also want to do cardio and everything. So I just want to point out that fit sanity, that's my invention, I think, but I'm sure that it's on the internet, fit sanity. Are you practicing fit sanity? Be careful because there's a little bit out there. So anyway, that's one thing. The second thing is this question. I'll just quickly go to it. And this is also part of fit sanity, although this is eat sanity. So it says, help please, brains trust. I've been thrown a curveball already. I have just found out that my nephew's 5th birthday tonight will be at Macca's. Are there any decent options that won't completely derail me so that I don't need to explain why I'm not eating to my family who think everything in moderation is fine? So the thing is, when we hear the word Macca's, it's quite funny because we automatically, I guess, when we first think about fitness and stuff, we think that's something that we should stay away from. So we sort of demonize places like that as good and bad. And it might also be because our understanding of it isn't quite enough yet, or our knowledge to know that we can go there and it will be okay. Firstly, I'll just say for something like Macca's, I don't want to say it too much, so I'll say that word one more time, Macca's, but that is probably the easiest place to take your own food to because nobody's coming out and serving you and nobody really cares. So if you want to do that, that's fine. If you're in sort of a contest prep or something, but if you're just doing the challenge and you're trying to learn healthy habits, It's okay to choose something from the menu that they actually got the kilojoules. You can translate it to calories on each menu item as well. So just so you know, it's not going to make or break you. And I think that sort of that definition of insanity where you do the same thing over and over again but expect different results, where you are thinking that you can kind of manipulate the situation and get yourself out of it and, oh, I've dodged this situation, dodged that situation. How about you just, I think, face the situation head on, make a plan and always have that plan. So for me, if I'm ever in the drive-thru at McDonald's with my family and I'm hungry, I've got about three different options that I can have. But I could have the whole menu if I want to, but things that make me feel good that fit in with what I like to do, and there's never a problem. And I pretty much got that strategy with every single restaurant. So you can do that. I think that works okay. But also, I do think that there were a couple of questions on the forum about adding in unhealthy foods to our database. And that is where that fit sanity or nutrition sanity comes in, where it's like you want to do the same thing, which is sort of sneak those things into your diet because they're not on there, but then sort of say that that you want to include them, but then if they're not included, you're going to sneak them in and trick yourself. So rather than saying, oh, you don't have that on the database, so it's going to ruin my whole challenge, I think it's really a good thing to actually examine your base behavior behind that, because it's actually a really good lesson. And if you can kind of nail this lesson, you go, okay, that makes sense. So I want to have a big chocolate muffin. It is not on the plan. Rather than tricking yourself or getting angry at the plan, I think it's good to look at those behaviors and go, okay, why do I crave that muffin? Is it something that I could replicate with some food that might be a little bit more nutritious for me that will keep me full off for longer? Is it sort of a 3 p.m. muffin? Because I'd say pretty much everyone, especially like with babies and everything, who doesn't crave a giant chocolate muffin at 3 p.m.? You know, it's about managing your feelings around that and making sure that you're not reverting to those same habits again and again. So we can facilitate the giant chocolate muffin, and it's probably going to come eventually in one of our plans where you'll be able to add whatever you want, or we can add it for you. You know, I don't want to overpromise, but the thing is, I want you to go back to basics with everything and stop expecting different things to happen from your same patterns. That is what I'm trying to say.
I like that, and I can relate with that so much, Nick. You know, the first comment I want to make is that I remember one of my first training environments, I was at a YMCA, and there was this fellow that was there literally every time I was there, no matter if I went in the morning or the evening, on the weekend, the weekday, you just always seemed to be there, right?
Yeah, I know, and those people.
You know those people, yeah?
Yeah.
And I think now reflecting on it, I understand maybe a little bit more why, but that's a different story. But over, let's say, like the course of 12 months, I saw my body change. I became stronger. I was able to, you know, lift more weight. I filled out my shoulders. I changed my physique, you know, within that 12 months. And this guy, you know, every time I saw him, he was doing the same obscure exercises with the same type of range of motion, the same like weight, right? And he just always kind of looked like he was doing the same thing. And he didn't see a lot of change, okay? And there's a few caveats there, but the main point here is that, you know, if you do the same thing over and over again, you can't expect, you know, magically something to change. And in the same breath, I want to say that training works by doing similar things over and over again to, you know, stimulate an adaption to occur. But we've got a sense of progression. Instead of, you know, bicep curling 5 kilos until the end of time, maybe you're pushing a few more reps or a few more sets, or maybe adding a little bit more weight and going a little bit heavier, right? Or maybe just changing that bicep curl. Instead of a standing bicep curl, you do an incline bicep curl, or like a chest supported bicep curl, you know, change, you know, train the bicep in different positions. Okay. But I see it a lot in my time with the challenge, Nick, and this is over the course of the past 4 years or more, where individuals would see the plan. The first thing what they want to do is make the plan fit into what they were previously doing. And my knee-jerk reaction is always to be like, well, if you were just going to do what you were always going to do, like, why did you choose to join the challenge? And there's lots of variety of reasons. Maybe they want the community, they want the competition, they want the structure, the end date, blah, 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 blah. That's fine. But if you are adamant that you always want to do lots of cardio, or adamant that you want to train 7 days a week, or adamant that you only want to consume, you know, 1,000 calories or something a day, or I've always done intermittent fasting and I'll never will not do anything other than that. It's like, well, are you enjoying your body composition at the moment? Is there a reason why you chose to sign up to a challenge, a body transformation challenge? There's, you know, the further reflections to be made. And I really like that concept of fit sanity. I enjoy that.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, it's funny because I was just thinking about it before, and I like it too. So I'm going to talk about it more and more and more forever. Because I just think, yeah, it can apply to food too. You know, just I've always done this. I've always done what my family wants me to do. I'm scared to tell them no. Well, you're going to get the same result. And that's with all the love in the world. I'm just telling you, you've got to find a way to be a little bit different.
Yeah. Now, the other comment I want to make is about our good friend Macca's. Okay. So I actually found myself at a Macca's drive-thru the other week. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my partner, she's pregnant. She has cravings. All right, babe, we'll go get Macca's. That's fine. That's fine. So I found myself in the drive-thru and I was looking at the menu, and I haven't really seen a menu in a while. And you're right. It has all the kilojoules next to it.
Yeah.
And what shocked me was how energy dense some of these meals are. And, you know, reflecting on my conversations that I've had with a range of different challenges across multiple challenges, where they might say things like, oh, I never eat over 1200 calories, or I've never eaten over 1,000 calories, or, oh my God, the program has 1500 calories. I can't possibly eat that much. Mm-hmm. And then I look at these burgers on this menu, it's in kilojoules, and, you know, 1 calorie is about 4 kilojoules. So I'm looking at these burgers and it's 5,000 kilojoules, 6,000 kilojoules, you know, 4,000 kilojoules. So I was like, whoa, like these burgers start at like 1,000 calories per burger. That's before any drink or chips or anything like that, or the chocolate sundae you order at the end. And reflecting on my time, maybe, you know, 5 years more ago, where I was maybe, you know, going to places like Macca's, you know, doing the Macca's run after you go out in your early 20s, you know, we've all kind of done that. And I would comfortably, you know, have a large, like, Big Mac meal and then probably get like a thick shake on the way out or something like that, not thinking too much, because I'm like, oh, I'm hungry, I'm gonna eat this. And if you think that, and I'm not talking about Macca's right now, but if you think that you've only ever consumed 1200 calories, or you couldn't possibly eat 1500 calories, or, oh my God, my program has 2000 calories, whew, so much food. I'm sure you have been to Macca's in your life. I'm sure you've eaten a burger with 1,000 calories in one sitting. And I'm sure you probably then had some chips and maybe like a Coke, not a Diet Coke, a regular Coke, and even like a chocolate sundae with extra fudge on that as well. You've eaten that in an evening and then still kind of been a little bit peckish afterwards. And I think we can all relate with that experience. So if you think that you can't consume a lot of calories, you can very quickly without knowing it. And an example is McDonald's. And I think we've all had that experience, or if not, it's not McDonald's, we've all had our experiences with fast food, let that be KFC, Hungry Jack's, Red Rooster, you know, you name it. We've all kind of had that experience in our life.
Yeah, it is easy to get those calories in.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying, even a date, one singular date is about 70 calories or something like that. So 3 dates and you're there.
3 dates and you got to get off Tinder, I reckon.
Swipe left on the date. Or right, I don't know what it is, because look, I'm old. Shane and I are having our 15-year wedding anniversary this week. So, wow. And we've been together for 20-whatever years. 20, that's longer than you've been alive.
Well, Nick, I'm almost 30, so.
Yeah, close. So I think we've been together for like 22 years. So you were 8 when we got together.
Oh gosh, maybe that was like my Macca's days. Maybe I was maybe having like a Macca's
happy
birthday
meal.
I reckon I was probably there, and you were, you know, having a date with Shane. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. We used to just honestly drink beers and eat pizzas every day all day.
Oh gosh, yeah. Nick, look, let's move on to my coach's corner, and I'd like to talk about what's the best to track, calories or macros. Okay.
Yeah.
And there are, oh yeah. So like there's quite a number of conversation about macros. And I think many of us come into the challenge with preconceived maybe expectations or beliefs or assumptions that we want to put macros up on a pedestal, being like, oh, what are the macros? Macros, macros, macros. And we've made a decision in the challenge to not prioritize macros. One, to better in line with what the challenge is, right? Body transformation competition. We're about building muscle, losing body weight, which macros have nothing to do with. Okay. And two, to help actually simplify the process. We're trying to rationalize it down into like one whole number, calories, without talking too much about the actual macro. And that's kind of how we see it described in the nutrition plan. And I respect that many individuals may have come on expecting macros. My follow-up thing for that would be, well, were you expecting micronutrients and fiber input? Were you expecting nutrition timing and all those other things? So why do we stop at the expectation of macros and not other things, okay? All right, so look, I think the first thing we should do is define what tracking is, because that's the important step, is tracking. What is it? Okay, so tracking is simply documentation or journaling our process or what strategy we're trying to employ. And that's important because whenever we see literature or research that looks at tracking, regardless of how they tracked, we see positive improvements in whatever they were trying to change. Let that be weight loss, track your food, training, track your training session, saving money, track what your money's coming in, money's coming out, you know, make a spreadsheet, get an accountant, track that. If you wanted to improve your language ability or whatever it is, if you were to spend some time tracking that and journaling that and documenting that, it makes a more significant change, okay? So when it comes down to our food and tracking our food, what's best? Do we look at our calories or our macros? Okay, so firstly, let's talk about calories. Calories are a way that we can measure energy. Okay, so we're measuring the energy that comes from the foods that we consume. Calories are actually predominantly used in the US. So in Australia, of course, we use kilojoules. However, within the fitness culture and dieting culture, it's predominantly using calories as a way to quantify the amount of energy that we consume. When it comes to weight loss or weight gain endeavors, it really comes down to a simple equation of energy in versus energy out, or, you know, the calories we consume versus the calories that we expend. Okay, so we have decided in the challenge to simplify it and going, well, that's the primary focus. Priority one is calories. We're focusing on our calories. Okay. The next step is, you know, some individuals want to follow their macros. And I think the challenge when it comes to following macros is that there's an assumption that one particular macro ratio is inevitably better or inherently better than another macro ratio. Okay, sure, we can strategize and theorize that, okay, we need this amount of protein to support muscle growth around, you know, 2 grams per kilo of body weight. And we need, you know, a minimum of maybe 0.6 or 0.7 grams per kilo of body weight of fat to support hormone production. Carbs, yeah, you know, we don't really need carbs, but we want as many carbs as we can to support training endeavors, right? But whatever ratio you choose to go of those 3 plus or minus 4 macronutrients, if you include ethanol or alcohol, we see that individuals lose weight at any of those ratio numbers. Yeah. So if you choose to go a high protein diet, you can lose weight. If you choose to go a low carb diet, as you see maybe in keto programs, you can lose weight. You can, if you choose to follow like a low fat diet, you can lose weight. If you choose to follow like a maybe a low protein diet, what we see in some you know, vegan plans, low protein, low fat, high carb, you can lose weight as well. It really comes down to how many calories you consume. Here's some problems that we face, of course. On certain labels, the calories that we consume may not be completely correct. And we know that manufacturers and producers can be, you know, up to 10% incorrect with their calorie intake. That's fine, okay? We know that that is an inconsistency across all of nutrition world, that there is this slight error rate. And then you factor in other things like, okay, if you consume a certain food at a particular time of day with certain predispositions, you know, how much fluid have you drinking that day, how much food have you drinking that day, what time of day is it? You know, how stressed are you? How much sleep have you had? You know, what's your gut flora like? You know, there's different absorption rates of different calories that you actually consume. Okay, so it throws a lot of stuff into this, you know, kind of soup of calories. How much are we actually consuming? But we need to kind of be aware that, okay, with all these kind of error rates, the law of averages kind of averages out, and we kind of can have a number that we can quantify this with. That is an argument that some folk who follow macros would say, being like, oh, well, calories are inconsistent. Macros is where we start. And I would say even then, macros are the same. You know, we don't know exactly how much protein and carb and fat is in certain foods. You know, take a vegetable. How's it grown a particular way that you are confident that it has this ratio of carb and fat if it's grown in this soil versus that soil? So we can scratch our head around those types of concepts as well. Even calories from individual macronutrients vary, where there is some literature that kind of points more towards maybe 8.9 calories per gram of fat, where we mostly use 9 calories per gram of fat. So that number can change on big scales. Same with proteins and carbs. I think from memory, carbs are about 4.2 calories per gram and proteins about 4.14 from memory, meaning that there is a slight variance if you think big numbers, but most of us just think I have 4 calories per gram of, you know, protein and carbohydrate, right? So these can kind of throw things out. Now, when it comes down to what should you track, my advice is think about total calories, yeah? It's kind of like thinking about budgeting. You just want to think about the total amount of money coming in versus the total amount of money coming out into your bank account. You wouldn't then try to categorize it. All right, I'm spending this much on my house, this much on personal items, this much of my transport budget, this much of my health budget. That's kind of like, you know, it's categorizing it into macros, yeah? And you may look at those individual things and be like, all right, maybe I want to spend more on my house, you know, my electricity bill, blah, blah, blah. I'm spending less on my personal care, like, you know, how much money I spend on my hair or beauty products and stuff like that. So you could approach it that way, but ultimately you want to think about big picture, right? We want to think about total amount of calories, thing the same way as how total amount of dollars coming into my bank account. You could easily follow macros as well, as long as you're consistent with that. Okay, I'm following just my macros or following just my calories. Again, macros, it adds an extra layer of complexity because you're assuming that one particular number of rate of macros is better than another particular number. It can be a little bit restrictive, meaning that if you follow kind of like that, if it fits your macros type dieting, all right, I'm going to have 200 grams of protein, 200 grams of carbs, and 100 grams of fats for a day. You have your certain meals that has different food combinations of different macro groups. And then you get at the end of the day and you're like, well, I need to find a food that has 24 grams of carbs, 1 gram of protein, and 10 fats. And you're like, well, what am I going to eat? And you're scratching your head. So that can become even more of a complicated process, because then you're like, well, how do I meet my macros? Because I've consumed these foods, but then now I need to find a food that kind of gets me to the end. And then you're kind of like, well, I need to find, you know, 10 grams of carbs from somewhere. And then what, you're going to go into your cupboard and drink, have a spoon of sugar to get your 10 grams of carbs. It can get like that kind of extreme, when you might enjoy the freedom of calories, being like, well, I need 100 calories at the end of the day. I'm going to have a bowl of ice cream. And then away you go. You have your bowl of ice cream, happy days. You get a little kick of energy and you enjoy that. You've reached your calories for that particular day. So it can be limiting if you are choosing to follow macros, which is one reason why we try not to complicate it. We're not saying, hey, you need to follow these particular macros, assuming that those macros are better than another set of macros, and then adding extra layers of complication to it when you could just follow your calories and get a great result out of that. Okay. Beyond that, if you choose to track your energy intake through a different mean, that is totally okay as well. If you were to uniform all your meals and then you said like a breakfast, and maybe every breakfast you choose to have, I don't know, one slice of toast, one slice of cheese and a protein shake, that's your breakfast. Yeah. Every single morning, you could just say, that's my breakfast. I'm having one breakfast. That is the same as saying I'm having 10 protein or, you know, 100 calories, you're saying I'm having one breakfast. So if you uniform that and repeat that and track that as one breakfast, that's your breakfast, yeah? And then you may choose over time to scale that down or scale that up. Same as if you may be choosing to create portions of food, and we've done that within the challenge where each serving of food once upon a time was identical to each other. So you've got different servings and you could just mix and match it. So there is ways that you can look beyond, you know, calories or macros to try to make it work, as long as you're kind of tracking it consistently and that it makes kind of logical sense, right? You wouldn't track, you know, how much money you're spending on fuel by the total amount of kilometers you drive. And sure, that is one way to kind of get an association between how much money you spend on fuel versus how many kilometers you drive, but depends on where you're driving. If you drive from Melbourne to Sydney versus driving around the inner suburbs, stop, start, you know, price of fuel goes up and down and stuff like that. So that can kind of obscure those numbers, but it ultimately comes down to that tracking practice. My advice, track the calories, worry only about the calories. Next, pay a little bit of attention to protein to support muscle growth. Yes. But then when it comes down to carbs and fats, it really just comes down to a personal preference. And anybody who wants to say otherwise, you know, I would say that there's been millions of people who've lost weight on a low carb diet and millions of people who've lost weight on a low fat diet. And both have been successful in maintaining that in the long term and being able to lose weight rapidly as well through those two different methods. So it comes down to calories.
Nick. That's right. Yeah. I've done both. It just depends. It's all personal preference. So we don't want to overcomplicate it. But also the other thing is, yeah, if you tick off all your foods, you do get to see what's going on as well. So just enjoy yourselves, you know, find some things that you like and stick to it.
Yeah. Nick, let's move on to our final segment here. We've got some questions from our community. Okay. First question here. What does everyone carry their prepped food in each day? Mm-hmm. I eventually want a mealami.
Yeah, a mealami. They're the coolest. They're like the Gucci of meal prep bags.
Right. Okay. I'm learning things. All right. But given the price, all right, it will be a Christmas present. Plastic bags look tacky. Shopping bags are too big. I've found an insulated lunchbox, but that is big enough for an adult. I have maybe one handbag that will be big enough, but I don't want food and drink containers with my personal items. Nick, what advice would you give this individual?
Okay, so last prep that I did, I purchased one of those, and I've got to say, have you seen me using it? Do you even know what it is?
No, no. That's why I didn't even know how to pronounce it, Nick.
What do I carry everything in apart from my big leopard bag? Do I look like a bag lady, plastic bag lady?
No, all I've ever seen you, Nick, I'm going to put you on the bus here. Mm-hmm. I've seen you just have aluminium foil and you've wrapped up like last night's steak or like a you know, some broccoli salmon that's been steamed or some salmon or like or just eggs. Some eggs in a bit of foil or mm-hmm. like just some lettuce I've seen you eat out of some foil. yeah, literally like one food item in some foil and that's lunch. And I'm like, wow. That's bold, Nick. I like that.
I know. So I've got to say, I've been through trying to have the sort of the best look of everything, thinking that that's going to make me organized. And I must say, I am very good at sticking to stuff. I'm very good at prepping stuff, but I just find basic Kmart containers and a plastic bag, as tacky as that might look, it works for me, you know. And in terms of, don't worry about if you think that like it looks a certain way, just do what works for you. In terms of those bags, I'm not trying to be against it. If anyone wants to send me one to try it and say, prove me wrong, go for it. But I really think that your money could be put elsewhere, because I think any type of a bag you could just grab and put your meal containers in and put some ice packs around it if you need to. It doesn't need to be a specific special meal prep bag. That's me putting it out there. I'm just saying I'm all for spending money on things. I have lots of activewear. We know this. It's all good. However, it's really weird because I'm really tight arsey in some ways. And I just don't want to spend money on meal prep containers and other things like that. I'll just use basic Kmart stuff. I prefer to buy, you know, the best beef that I can find, which is probably more expensive than one of those mealamis now, you know. So for me, I don't have any advices other than don't stress about those little things. Just try to get organized with your containers and then in the bigger picture, it doesn't matter. You could buy an Esky, to be honest. You can buy an Esky from Bunnings, a small little cute one. Shane's got a cute one. Shane uses one of our Max's bags. We've got some of those. He uses that. He also uses one of his old bags from one of his old works, and I think I use that occasionally. But, you know, you see me with my plastic bags. Oh, my gosh, I'm just rubbing my nose now. I'm just so glamorous. But you know, I am going to be competing, and I'll be looking – all right, so I do know a thing or two about meal prep, and I just don't think it matters. That's my answer.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think if you take that step back, maybe 10 years plus ago, we all thought that you needed to eat every 2 hours and that you needed to have 7-8 meals a day. And our plans reflected that, right? But, you know, as kind of the literature developed, we kind of understand meal frequency, and we go, at most we kind of want a minimum of 4 boluses or servings of protein per day. So if you have a minimum of 4 servings of protein, meaning that you could have breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, each one with a serving of protein, 2 thumbs up, happy day, you're done, right? So if you think of simplifying it, you don't need to join the challenge with an expectation that you need to have something ludicrous, 10 meals a day, where you need to carry one of those. All I know in terms of meal prep bags is that six pack chef bag thing. And that's kind of an Esky type thing. And you've got little shelves to put all your meals. That was popular maybe 10 years ago, because that's what we thought. We need to eat 7 meals a day. So if you're going to go have your work day, it's you better bring all your meal prep or you're going to lose your gains. It's it's not quite what it is now. So in the challenge, you'll see you've got breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, 4 bowls of protein, plus you've got your training protein, the sports supplements. If you're having a nighttime protein, you've got 5 boluses of protein, plus an after workout protein, 6 bowls. Great, you're ticking all the boxes of distribution of protein throughout the day. If you're thinking an average Australian going to a workplace, you know, maybe you have breakfast at home, you have your lunch meal, maybe, you know, a container, maybe some a snack, maybe you turn that into a second meal, or you choose to break it up. Maybe you've got a protein bar, a piece of fruit and some rice cakes, a snack. You know, you could put that just carry it into work. Yeah, you put it in the work fridge if you have a work fridge. If you don't, maybe you do need a little handbag or something to put that meal in, and then you go home and have dinner. So, you know, you kind of go, am I potentially catastrophizing this a little bit, going, I need to have this really fancy melami. Is that how to pronounce it right, Nick? Melami? Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I need to have this really fancy melami bag, because I'm going to expecting to have, you know, 10 meals a day. Or is it just I'm bringing my lunch to work in a container? And there's a work fridge. So you go, I can probably have that in my car in the passenger seat driving to work. It's going to be fine for the half an hour commute to work or whatever I do. I put in the work fridge, it's okay. So you just kind of go, am I concerned about something that doesn't need to be concerned about? Is my kind of response to that.
I agree. And I feel like I'm talking to Lucia or Zara, my daughters, and going, you don't need that. But yeah, I mean, it's only, I've probably come full circle. I remember when years ago, Lorna Jane was the thing, and I had every new thing every day because I thought that would help me in the gym. Yep. You know, it's just, yeah, I think we live and learn.
I think there's a little bit of a common theme, I guess, in these podcasts, Nick, with you and I, where, you know, we kind of a little bit of a debunking of stuff, trying to rationalize it down into the simplest form, where you go, okay, you could go out and spend lots of money on meal prep containers, a fancy bag and all those things. And, you know, maybe the newest brand of Lorna Jane, this, and, you know, the newest bit of equipment, that, and all these things just to try to get the edge on your training. Then you kind of look past that and go down to the basics, being that didn't matter. I spent, you know, lots of time, money, energy towards focusing on these things, and it didn't matter. You know, let's say our conversation about macros, it doesn't matter as much. Focus on calories. Conversations about cardio, doesn't matter as much. Focus on our step count. Conversations around training, doesn't matter about rep ranges. It's mainly focusing on our volume and our intensity, the balance of the two. So it's about kind of simplifying it more and more. And I hope, dear listener, that by listening to this podcast here, that we help accelerate you through all the in the nicest way, bull crap that Nick and I went through in our times of fitness, where we're that wasn't important, Don't waste your time here. Don't waste your time there. Focus on the big rocks here. And if you focus on that, it almost becomes easy where you go, well, great, cool. I don't need to worry about all this other noise. I can just see what's actually important. Get in there, get the job done, go home and enjoy life. And that could be with your friends, your family, with your video game console, maybe a good book, whatever it is. Go enjoy that and get the training in and out, I reckon.
Yeah, because I've got to just one more little thing. If you know, if you're wearing your $5 Kmart leggings, but you've got, you know, the best glutes in town that's come from the best training ever, and you're carrying your plastic bag, I guarantee you, you're going to feel pretty bloody good about yourself. So just get into the gym and get those squats done.
Love it. Yep. The next question here. Hi, everyone. I have a coffee around 7:30 a.m. on training days, and then I train around 9:30 a.m. I don't eat before I train. Should I? If so, what? Okay. Mm-hmm. So if we distill this for a moment, mainly a question around maybe pre-workout nutrition, talking about what we should consume before we eat. Okay. I think my knee-jerk reaction to this question was that you could simply just eat your breakfast before you train. You've got time. You're going to have a coffee at 7:30. You might as well train. Might as well have breakfast before you train. You've got a few hours to digest that. You know, talking about maybe caffeine, you might benefit from having caffeine closer to your workout. So maybe within that like half an hour window prior to training, you might see a better experience with caffeine and the benefits that might come from things like pre-workout or coffee if you have it very close to your workout. So that's the first thing I'd say. Now, when it comes to pre-workout nutrition, there's two main things that we want to prioritize. One is hydration, okay? We want to be adequately hydrated for our training session. So we want to drink plenty of water leading up to the training session and, you know, looking for things to expedite that hydration process, and that we could, you know, leverage something like salt. So like for me, when I'm having a pre-workout, you know, it's a big bit of water in my pre-workout, I put a little bit of salt in there, that can help with the hydration effects of that water with a little bit of salt. Okay, so if you're having some a particular workout where you're feeling maybe low in energy for whatever reason, it might be because you weren't adequately hydrated and you may benefit from drinking more water. The problem, which I did actually today, was if you drink too much water prior to your training session, really close to your training session, that water is literally sitting in your gut. So if you're trying to do certain exercises, you know, it can make you feel really sluggish. Yeah. So for me, you know, I was drinking a bunch of water, then I decided to have a pre-workout and went and trained literally this morning, and like my stomach was just kind of like full with water. So when I was doing my set, I was like, oh, like I feel it in my gut. Okay. So that's the problem that you might face if you drink lots and lots of water, you know, maybe in the 5-10 minutes before you actually go and exercise. Okay. So that's number one, hydration. Be adequately hydrated, important for our training performance. Number two, priority number two is we want to be consuming carbohydrates before our training session. Okay. This is where it gets a little bit more complicated when we start talking about macros, is we want to try to be choosing what types of carbohydrates we want to be having depending on when you eat in relation to your workout. Okay. So if you are eating within 0 to 1 hours prior to your training session, so let's say this individual training at 9:30. So if you choose to eat between 8:30 and 9:30, that hour leading up to it, you would want to look for what we call simple in quotation marks or easy to digest carbohydrate. Okay. So that's where you might see bodybuilder bros choosing to have a white rice. You know, they might choose to have maybe simple sugars like lollies or candies, or things like fruit would be a really good idea. So if you are maybe someone to wake up at 5 a.m., you're in the gym by 5:30. Okay. You know, you may choose to have like a cup of coffee and a banana. You know, you got some carbohydrate, you got some coffee, we're drinking plenty of water leading up to that. And we've got a good training session ahead of us. If you are eating 1 to 3 hours before your training session, you want to be looking for more kind of complex carbohydrates in quotation marks. Okay. So that would be things like oats or wholemeal bread, wholemeal pasta, right? Now we want to be having those foods or carbohydrates with more fiber that make it more, a little bit more complicated, so that it can slow down that rate of digestion, so that when that carb gets broken down into its glucose molecule that's in our bloodstream, so that we get a peak of glucose in our bloodstream for our training session. Okay. Now, does it in the big scheme of thing, doesn't matter if, you know, you're, oh, I'm, you know, 1 hour and 5 minutes before my training session. Oh, should I have like wholemeal bread or white bread? Like if you're in that state, in that position, you know, we don't want to be stressing out about that type of stuff, right? You know, if you choose one or the other, the difference might be, you know, let's say 5% difference in your like training performance. But that's kind of like maybe those 1% type things that you want to be leaning towards, where if you're kind of having a meal, you're training at lunchtime, you're eating around like 9 a.m., you want to be looking for kind of those like slow digesting carbohydrate to prepare for your training session at lunchtime, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's the gist of it. We want hydration, maybe some caffeine prior, and then you know, some carbohydrate prior as well. Like my general rule for training is that I want to be having a meal in the hours leading up to my training session and having a meal in the hours following my training session. So if you're choosing to train at 9:30 to let's say 10:30, you could just simply have your breakfast, train 9:30 to 10:30. And then simply have your lunch. And that breakfast could be at 7:30 with your coffee, and that lunch could be at 12 o'clock, right? You know, like a quote normal lunch. And that could be completely fine for any pre or post workout nutrition and in terms of eating certain sustenances for muscle growth.
Mm-hmm.
Nick.
Yep.
Next question here. What's something I can add to my daily water bottle just to give it a bit of flavor, lol question mark. Nick, some individuals you know, maybe drinking lots of water, maybe a new thing to them. Maybe they get lots of their hydration from other drinks other than water, or maybe lots of hydration from the foods that they consume, and drinking lots of straight water can be a little bit bland for some individuals. What advice would you give to someone who's trying to drink more water but just simply isn't enjoying the taste?
Well, shameless plug, Sip and Burn, Crea Burn, or the non-stim melt would be three good options. But just say that we're not going down that path. I personally like to squeeze a little bit of lemon into my water. I also personally like to have a mineral water. I'm sure you've seen me at the office opening up my big bottle of mineral water.
Yeah.
That might be being Italian, you know. But sometimes I think a nice carbonated water can kind of just add a little bit of pep to your water step. So Ooh. That's a good one too. And lemon or lime or any type of citrusy thing I think is quite nice. And then also there's also the option of going for if you're new to water and you really want to try, you know, to get something, a sugar-free cordial is quite nice too. So I think in our household at the moment, I haven't used it for a while. I might have to go and have a look. It actually looks like the dishwashing liquid, but there's a lime one kicking around. And there's also lemon and a raspberry one. So they're the ones that I would probably, you know, recommend. And also, like, I love to have water and everything like that. But if I'm desperate and I'm in prep and something's going on, I'm happy to have like a Pepsi Max as well. So don't shoot me.
Pepsi Max, how dare you? I am a Diet Coke man.
Yeah,
as if you enjoy Pepsi Max.
I don't know. I just like a bit of Pepsi. I don't know, but yeah. So anyway, they're my recommendations. That's all that I've pretty much done to flavor my water. I don't know if anyone else has any ideas. You can definitely let us know.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think one, like, I drink just lots of straight water, but then two, I do like carbonated water. So the Soda Stream and yeah, so definitely one of my favorites. So not a challenge that I face personally, but there are lots of strategies you can try. One thing I would recommend and then ask this individual to reflect on is that, you know, consuming water is a very normal thing humans should do. And if you're finding that challenging, maybe you should spend a bit more time drinking water so that maybe we can change or modify our taste buds to enjoy drinking water again. Because if you have gone so long that you don't enjoy drinking water, there might be a few kind of health complications that come with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Nick, final question here. It's a little bit of a biggie. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. So hopefully someone can shed some light on this for me. I completed two workouts today, cardio and weights. That's part number one we will have to comment on. As a result of this, I've been starving all day. That's comment number two we'll have to comment on, Nick. Is it okay to sometimes consume a little more on big training days, or should I keep to my 2,450 a day limit? That's comment number four. We've got a few things to comment on so far, Nick.
Yeah.
I'm trying to shed as much fat as possible during the challenge. My watch says an extra 1,000 burned, or 1,000 calories, I'm assuming they're saying, burned. However, I'm sure that's not very accurate. Thanks, team. Okay. Nick, this is a big one. I think every sentence is probably its own kind of question or comment, and we'll kind of have to like speed run over a few of those
Unpack it.
Okay. So first thing I would say is that it sounds like the crux of the question is, should I consume more food on big training days or stick to the target calories? Okay. I think that's like the ultimately crux of the conversation, regardless of all the other extra things. Okay. So starting with that, look, I think ideally, if you are doing more exercise, regardless of the goal, if you're doing more exercises, you should be eating more. You know, for example, you know, Nick, yourself, you have trained for marathons and Ironmans and such. So by doing more physical activity, by expending more energy, inherently you would want to consume more energy. Okay. So that's the first thing I would say. But the problem that we face is that if we are doing more exercise beyond our current goal of energy expenditure, it's hard to measure that energy expenditure while you're doing it or the 24 hours afterwards. And then it's difficult to measure the energy you consume to try to kind of, quote, eat back those calories. So we have a mismeasurement of energy expenditure with a mismanagement of energy intake, which leads to a mismanagement of our kind of strategy. Yeah. So the first thing I'd say is that for any like weight loss goals, we want to be using cardio as a way to increase our energy expenditure to create an energy deficit. Yeah. If you are already consuming food at an energy deficit, you're already there. Yeah. So you don't need to do any more cardio, which is the reason why we don't have cardio in our plans, where we are asking you to input, you know, roughly how physically you are per day via your step counts. So you're already in an energy deficit. Therefore, you don't need to do any cardio training to create energy deficit because you're already there. Yeah. If anything, you're just accentuating that energy deficit. So instead of going from maybe a 10% deficit, you doing cardio are going to be a 15% deficit or beyond. Yeah. So that's when it gets tricky and just unnecessary. So if you're doing cardio to try to lose body weight, it can be a little bit ineffective because you're already creating a deficit. Okay, that's the first thing I'd say. Next, it sounds like you want to lose as much fat as possible. Yeah. Being in an energy deficit helps with our weight loss endeavors. Yeah. But it's not, we can't be confident on where we lose that weight. We lose muscle mass, we lose body fat, we lose some bone mass depending on how you design your training. So we need to prioritize strength training to stimulate our body to maintain as much muscle as we can. Yeah. Which is why all of our training programs are designed to build muscle. So those folks that are trying to lose body weight or lose fat can maintain as much muscle as they can. And those folks that are trying to gain muscle or gain as much body fat can stimulate as much muscle as they can to grow. Okay. So when it comes down to our training endeavors, we want to prioritize strength training so that we can signal our body to maintain its muscle mass while we're on this energy deficit, so that we can choose to lose our body fat rather than lose our muscle mass, okay? So by completing cardio training or prioritizing cardio training, it can take away from the signaling effect of strength training and then just leave you fatigued, right? And tired, so then you can't train as effectively, yeah? So I would say for this individual, it might be a limiting factor to try to complete cardio, especially if you're trying to complete cardio on the same day or at the same time as your strength training sessions, okay? So if you try to do your cardio before your strength training sessions, you're going to be tired. You won't be able to lift as heavy. If you try to do cardio after your strength training sessions, it can blunt the like anabolic signal of strength training, meaning that you won't get the same response to build muscle after strength training. And it just takes away from time where you could just be eating after your strength training session to build muscle, yeah? So it's just simply a limiting factor. But that's my comments around train twice a day. I don't think we need to train twice a day. Previous programs, and maybe 10 years ago on the challenge, were training twice a day. It's just unnecessary, especially if we're impacting cardio and strength training. And you'll find that there's very, very, with lots of varies, limited cardio elements on the M challenge. And that's via design because we're mainly focusing on our step count. Okay. Let's break down a few other things this individual has said. We've already talked about two workouts a day. It can be limiting, yeah? We don't really want to be training twice a day unless we are in this not just advanced, but super advanced category where we want to be distributing our training volume across multiple days. And you may be doing, let's say, 10 sessions per week, but those sessions might be very short, let's say 20 to 30 minutes long. But that's a much deeper, broader conversation outside the scope of what the End Challenge offers. Okay. Number two, let's talk about the effects of a workout on hunger. Okay, and I think we've all had our different experiences with hunger after a workout. The first thing I'd say is that the literature does suggest that your hunger after your workout is highly individual and context specific. So, you know, Nick, you and I would have two very different experiences with hunger after a session, depending on what type of session we did and then, you know, where we are in our, you know, training. Yeah. So let's say yourself, Nick, you're contest prepping. So maybe right now after your training sessions, you may have a burst of hunger. You feel hungry afterwards. Whereas another training session a week later, you might be like, oh, I'm really full. That's the last thing I want to do. I don't want to eat. And there is some research that does suggest that most individuals report a sense of satiety after eating. So if you do like a training session, the first thing you do after your session is you don't really want to eat. Yeah. And we've all kind of experienced that. You know, you've just finished doing your last set of deficit push-ups like Amanda Peters has done in her program. The last thing on her mind right now is, all right, I'm going to go have my chicken broccoli rice for lunch. She's kind of like, well, I just want to maybe drink some water, just kind of like chill out for a minute, maybe have a shower, those types of things, and then going and eating maybe half an hour later. Yeah. Okay. But again, it's very highly individual. And most individuals will report later that day they feel hungry. Again, a few weeks ago when I had COVID and my physical activity level was plummeting, it was nothing, it was non-existent. My hunger level was non-existent too. But then as soon as I increased my step count and got back to training, my hunger came back with a vengeance. Yeah. So that was very specific to how much physical activity I was doing on a particular day. Yeah. The final comment I'll make will be about eating back calories. Many individuals are wearing smart devices such as Apple Watches, Garmins, Fitbits, Polar, you name it, where it can predict how much energy you expend on a particular day. That can be based off your age, your body weight, your physical, the exercise that you choose to do, how long you're doing it, your heart rate, a bunch of factors. Really cool, really smart technology. However, I don't think it's there yet to really put a number and put that number on a pedestal. Meaning that, again, there's some literature that suggests that some smartwatches are up to 80% incorrect, right? So it might say that you are like, you know, expending 1,000 calories like this individual, but really you're spending 1,800 calories. Yes, huge variance in that energy expenditure rate, okay? So sure, if you are consistently using a tool that is incorrect, yeah, and wait for this one. So if you're consistently using your smartwatch, and it says that you burnt, you know, 2,000 calories when really you burnt 1,000 calories. If you are consistently looking at that number and tracking that over time, that number can give you some indication where you go, okay, this particular workout, I expended more energy than this other particular workout. Okay, sure. That can give you some data to help your decision-making process. Should it be the be-all and end-all? No, because if you think that you are expending 2,000 calories in your workouts, one, that's one big workout. You know, most workouts, especially resistance training workouts, maybe 100 calories. Yeah. You know, maybe going for a half an hour run might burn, you know, maybe 200 calories. This is pretty low how much calories we burn in a particular workout. Probably a bigger effect of the energy expenditure over the 24 hours afterwards on that EPOC effect after our training stimulus. And then you can't, again, clearly outline how much energy you've expended. And then you can't clearly say, all right, I've expended 134 calories. I'm then going to eat back my 134 calories when you were trying to use that cardio effect to extend your energy deficit. So you're extending a deficit, but then you're trying to eat back to maintain that deficit, even though you're eating back this exercise that you tried to do to make the deficit. So it seems like lots of unnecessary exercise, again, complicating, throwing lots of things at the wall, hoping that it sticks. But Nick, that's kind of like my thoughts around that question. Big question, lots of things. Do you have any other comments you'd like to make about that big whammy of a question?
It's a huge one, and it's such a trap where we think doing more is going to help us, especially if it's fat loss. It's different if you're training for a marathon. That's different because You want to do as much as you can to make yourself as efficient as possible to be able to complete that marathon. And it won't matter so much what you need to eat. You might slam 10 bananas down because your goal is different. But I'm telling you, like from, I guess from personal experience, excess activity makes you bloody hungry and you just want to eat it all back. And your body actually naturally, if you listen to it, we always say listen to your body, but if you listen to it, you'll probably end up at maintenance. You know, like you don't actually go over. You kind of just end up saying the same because your body's not like it might, you might stuff yourself one day, but then it'll even out. So you just end up, that's why you go, I just am exactly the same, because your body's very clever at just wanting to stay exactly the same.
Exactly.
So if you want to, if you're doing it just because you want better body composition, I would implore you, or I'll say as Coach Steve would say, I would invite you to rethink that.
Ooh, I like it. I think my last comment I'll make is that I don't think I maybe gave this person a clear answer on what to do. Yeah. So I think that the if you dear listener, find yourself in this position where maybe you did a particularly higher physical activity day. Like for example, you did your training session in the morning and then you had an impromptu hike with your best friend at 12 o'clock. They call you, go, oh, do you want to go hike mounts, you know, XYZ? And you're like, yeah, I'll go hike with you. Sure, sure, sure. 3 hours later, you've gone and done 20,000 steps around the mountain. You're like, Jesus Christ, I've done a lot of physical activity today. Should I eat some more food? Okay, this is a scenario you might find yourself in. You've done your weight session and you've now done a quote kind of cardio session. You've done a big kind of walk hike situation. My advice to you would be to scale up your nutrition plan according to your step count. So that's one way we can quantify our kind of energy expenditure via our step count. So on that particular day, if you did 20,000 steps, I would invite you to scale up your nutrition for that particular day to that higher spectrum, and that's going to multiply your energy intake while maintaining that kind of energy deficit calculation, so that, okay, you could consume a little bit more food because you've done a little bit more exercise just to help maintain, because we don't want to be in a too big of a deficit. If you're talking like a 30% energy deficit, all right, you know, you probably are losing a bit of muscle mass. You're not recovering from that strength training session you did in the morning and those types of things. So you may benefit from having just a little bit more food, and by a little bit, you know, maybe an extra 100, 200 calories on that particular day. Again, that number can be difficult to manage, and probably the best way is to simply update your energy expenditure via the physical activity scale on the M Challenge app. And that can give you some insight on maybe this kind of how you can scale your calories up on that particular day. I think grossly on the big picture, we want to be trying to like lose weight at a rate of like, let's say 0.5 to 1% of our body weight per week. And it might be better to look at your total calories consumed on a weekly basis and your total steps completed on a weekly basis. And that may average out some of those bigger physical activity days or those kind of like bigger or lower energy intake days. And if you look at like from a weekly perspective, that can give you a better insight to your kind of bigger picture, more macro kind of idea on your body transformation strategies.
Oh yeah. And I'll say one more thing as well. If you've chosen rapid fat loss, then you're going to be in quite a bit of an energy deficit. But then if you find yourself being more active, I do probably invite you to change that rapid to say moderate, and you'll find yourself not being as hungry, and then you'll be able to just stick with it for longer as well. So I think that's a good strategy as well. So sometimes for people choosing rapid, it actually backfires because you're freaking starving all the time. Oh, and yeah, unless you're stepping on stage in a few weeks, you don't need to be starving.
No.
Even then.
Mm-hmm. Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 74. If you enjoyed this episode, go check out the 73 other episodes of the Challenge Weekly Show. And what did I say last time, Nick? Train hard, eat well, and may your squats be deep.
Absolutely. Amen. Bye, everybody.
See you next week. Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.